Blog Talk Radio.
There is a sixth dimension beyond that which is known to men. It is a dimension as immense as the sky and as perpetual as eternity. It is the middle ground between illumination and darkness, between knowledge and ignorance. It lies between the depths of man's horror and the apex of his learning. This is a dimension of fantasy. It is an area which we call the Eerie Zone.
Hey! Thought I'd drag that out of the mothballs there for show number 600. Of Eerie House Radio.
600.
Yep, and our 284th Eerie House Oldie Timey Radio in so doing. Yep. Want to welcome the live chatters here to the show. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and along with
the third web slinger on the panel. It is I, Gar the Ghoul, blabbing it to you all.
But you're thankfully not from a Don Glut movie. Yes.
Thankfully not. And hello to Frogman and good old Bob. Where is the thing for good old Bob?
Hey, guys. During this time, Dale, we have played 1,061 complete radio shows and 615 clips thus far.
Getting there. We're starting off. CW's in the chat as well. So while we're all here, gang, before we get into swinging some golf clubs around, the old mashy niblick, wanted to see what you guys think about moving the showtime up on Friday, like an hour, or perhaps even 2 hours. I'd like to hear you weigh in, Fogsbane, good old Bob. What do you think?
6:30 hour, right?
6:30 or 7:30? What do you think, gang? Thumbs up, thumbs down? If it's two options,
we need more than a thumbs up or thumbs down.
There we go. Yeah. Fogsbane, 6:30.
There you go.
Yeah, yep, he's right. Fogsbane remembers back in the day. It was 7:30.
But the nice thing about 6:30 is it's the same time as the Saturday show. So there's no confusion there, except from its hosts.
Could make my lame ads even easier to make.
Yes. And if we stay on the daylight savings time, the 6:30 and 6:30, it won't matter as much, right?
All right. Well, we'll make a final decision this week. Watch for the ads. They usually come out, Wednesday night and Thursday night on the Eerie House Facebook page and my Facebook page. You can check that out, and we will let you know what we finally decide. And that'll start, next week, I guess. Why not?
Why not?
So, yeah, we're running through the links tonight, as they say. Shooting around, perhaps.
Well, for me, I'm just puttering around, so.
For those
non-sports enthusiasts, why are we puttering around, Dave?
Because I usually stick around the putt-putt golf course, that's why. So I'm puttering around.
I thought there was some type of golf event this week.
There's the Masters. The winner gets the green jacket, and you're all whoever wins gets the chance to for the rest of their life. They're invited to the tournament to, at the very least, to try out to see if they can qualify. And Tiger Woods himself is even back, even after his accident.
The winner just gets some free clothing. That's it.
No,
I can go to the Walmart and get clothing.
No! You
but they have to wear this
endorsements.
They have to wear this green jacket.
It's a horrible green.
Yeah.
That sounds more like a penalty than a
I take it neither of you have actually played on a real golf course very often, if at
no,
all.
No,
how
no.
How about you, Dave?
I played on a par three course, and I've done a couple of times for a snow, I forget what they call it, the snow type fundraiser type thing, the snow golfing. That's interesting.
And since there was a period
so
in my
bad,
life.
Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, since the snow, if anything cuts all over the place, you can't tell how bad of a golfer I truly am. So.
It occurs to me, if it snows while you're golfing, you'll never find the ball.
You use black
balls. So they give you colored balls. They
yeah.
give you colored balls.
Oh.
Yeah. They have pink, like an orange peach color. There's yellow ones. I would use black.
The blue
yeah.
Scotty
the
and the yellow Scotty and the green Scotty. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a fundraiser.
There was a period in my life where I was fortunate enough to play like quite a bit of golf. My early golf experience was as a caddy, as a youth. Didn't play as a caddy, though, until a few years later. I started playing in my 20s, and I didn't have the patience for it. It's an incredibly difficult skill-based game, which is why Dave's name for tonight's show, Golf is Murder, is very apt. It's murder to learn how to play. And if you've had any success with sports and you think golf is going to be easy, think again. There are many variables, and it's skill-based. It's extremely difficult. You don't need a great deal of strength to play it, but, you know, a lot of hand-to-eye and that sort of thing. Caddyshack, great golf movie.
When I missed the shot, I blamed two things, Chernobyl and the wind.
Yeah. But once we had kids, the golf game was over, man. It is an expensive sport.
Even on your public
list. Did you say exciting?
No, he said expensive.
It's an expensive
game. It's an elitist, as George Carlin said, it's an elitist type sport.
Doesn't have to be. I mean, I didn't wear the weird clothes or anything like that. I wore jeans and like a polo shirt, and that was it. Well, shoes.
You've got the. I'm not sure. Is the reason they wear such odd clothing is so people will see them and not hit them with the ball? Also, you've got the shoe. You got footwear. You got those expensive clubs. You got a golf cart. You got it's very expensive. If you go all in.
It is, but there are...
If you go all in, yeah.
There were places, if you went on Sunday nights, it was extremely cheap to use the course. So you could get by without spending a fortune, at least back then. And I played about 54 holes a week.
Wow. It occurs to me, in bowling, you can rent the shoes. In golf, can you rent the weird clothing?
No. What it is with the weird clothing, Gar, is that... They got out of the house before the wife saw how they dressed themselves.
Yeah,
exactly. That explains the plaid pants. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, CW.
There's a guy that worked that dresses in things that I don't think a golfer would even wear, but the plaid pants day is one of them.
It's
just
with not matching plaid shirt or some polka dots or
right.
Know,
oh yeah.
And a tam with a little fuzzy ball on it, you know, on the head.
Uh-huh.
Little hat. High socks, you know. The knee
right.
high socks. Yeah.
Oh, well, am I wrong? Did golf came out of Scotland? Is that right?
I believe so.
That's pretty much where the modern golf comes from, yeah. It's been
the late
around
Robin
for a
Williams.
Long time, but it was – they're the ones that really kind of perfected it as – the game it became that we know it as. So
yeah,
right.
They take the credit for that.
But the
late Italians have the best explanation. You hit it a ball with a stick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Robin Williams has a great set where he talks all about golf and Scotland and stuff. You drink a whole lot, then you try to hit a ball with a crooked stick and go, there you go.
Yeah. It's a good game. Fun game. You get outside with nature and things. It's landscaped very nicely. But, yeah, it's very expensive. But what isn't expensive is tonight's show. Three free tales for you.
Right.
About the good old game of golf.
About golfing games and this. You even got a brand new one to Erie House tonight, Dale.
Oh, that's right.
Good old Gangbusters.
I've been waiting for this.
Yeah.
This was
Dave and I had fun tweaking some of these.
We did. And this is one Gar tweaked up for us, so thank you, Gar. And Gangbusters is really kind of the first on-radio national coast-to-coast program where they did true-to-life police stories. And it wasn't just the FBI cases or whatever. It was an interesting story that they would pull out of any police department. At some point, for a while, they even had a person that was actually directly involved in that case show up at the end. I'm not sure whether this has been or not. And it actually ran from January 15th, 1936, for 21 years until November 27th, 1957. So it had a pretty good run and did pretty good in the ratings. And it's interesting, even in the television version, it really wasn't planned at first, but Dragnet hit television. It was such a smash hit, but Jack Webb only had enough money to produce so many programs at first, kind of like Chuck Norris did when he did the Walker Texas Ranger. And it went over so well, he had to stop and make new productions of it. And during the hiatus, they brought in a television version of Gangbusters. And as Dragnet was number one, it also became number one on television ratings at that time. And then as soon as Jack Webb was back with new episodes, Gangbusters was gone, at least at that point. It was the first time a number one rated show had ever been replaced with another number one rated show. So that's just kind of a strange little oddity there.
That's right. And also, we're going to have a crisis tale.
Yep, another tale from the mind of Jim French.
And dark fantasy. That's what we got on board for you today.
Yeah. I was kind of blown away that there were that many golf stories, but there are quite a few in old-time radio.
Especially murder ones, you know.
Because
golf is a real killer. It's a killer game, man, I'm telling you.
Yep.
Maybe in certain circles. I don't know. I think these people are playing golf with the wrong people, but I don't know.
The right people, yeah.
Or the right people. Well, it's good for radio.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
There you go.
And we might as well start with the new to the program show of Gangbusters. And this one's called The Case of the Golf Course Murders.
Ooh.
And it's from?
It was
August 7th, 1948. Gangbusters, presented in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement departments throughout the United States. The only national program that brings you authentic police case histories.
Honorable John J. Sullivan, former Deputy Commissioner and Chief of Detectives of the New York City Police Department, to narrate by proxy tonight's case. Chief Sullivan, you've told me tonight's case was a murder mystery.
Well, Don Gardner, it was. But I think it would be best if we follow this gang of dangerous criminals through every move. and then see what the police did with the facts as they turned up in the course of investigation.
All right, Chief Sullivan, go right ahead.
Thank you, Don. Suppose we begin a little more than a year ago in the Astoria section of New York City on a dark, rainy night. A lone man had parked his car at the curb in front of an old frame house. Walked up on the porch, looked through the lighted window, then rang the doorbell.
Come on, Nick, open up.
Breyer?
Yeah, open up.
Okay.
Nice night out, huh?
Oh.
I didn't come to talk about the weather.
Give me a raincoat.
Carrie?
Yeah?
Come on downstairs. We got company.
Okay, in a minute.
I want to talk to you, Nick. Not with her.
Okay, let's go in the parlor.
I ran into Gabe today.
Yeah?
Tells me he's been doing okay.
You know, Gabe. He talks big.
You better start talking big, Nick.
What do you mean?
Your bookkeeping's been all wet.
Who are you going to believe, Gabe or me?
Till I learn different, Gabe.
You've been getting every cent that's coming to you.
I don't like to be held out on, Nick.
The original deal has been lived up to.
Gabe said his kids picked up 43 cars last month.
Gabe is a liar.
The original deal was that I'd also get 50 bucks for every car Gabe's kids picked up. I want the rest of my dough.
Gabe's kids only brought in 18 cars. You got paid for those. I'll show you the books if you want.
I believe your books as much as I believe you.
Look, we got a good thing here, Breyer.
Trouble is, it's better for you than for anybody else.
Well, why shouldn't it be? Who goes to all the trouble painting the cars, fixing up the motor numbers, shipping them out of town?
Look, Nick, gonna get my dough one way or the other.
Hey, cut it out. Look on me, will you?
Playing rough, boys?
Oh, Carrie. Come in.
Hello, Breyer. Haven't seen you around in a long time. I missed you.
This is the last time you'll see me. Now listen to me, Nick. I'm gonna get
Nick.
That... Yeah?
I'm fixing drinks. You'll have to come in the kitchen and open the bottle for me.
Sure, okay. I'll be right back, Breyer.
I'm not going anyplace.
Corkscrew, scare me to death.
Okay, kitty, don't get up.
What did you offer him a drink for?
To get you out of the spot.
That idiot, Gabe. That could wring his neck.
If you ask me, that'd be wringing the wrong neck.
Jerk.
Breyer's the guy that's putting up the beef. Either you pay him off with cash...
You don't get a cent.
Or you just pay him off.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a little too smart for this setup. You can't make any money out of the smart ones.
So how are you going to do it?
I'll figure out a way.
Here?
Yeah.
Tonight?
Yeah.
Then what?
We dump the strip out in the country.
What about Gabe?
Who knows? Maybe we give him the same treatment.
Get the bottle.
Yeah.
Let me keep our customer happy.
Gabe, that's a nice place.
Oh, Carla, baby, I don't feel like driving way out there in all this rain. Besides, the joint stinks.
It was all right when they had that blonde singer out there.
Oh, are you going to throw that up to me again, Carla? I never even met the dame. Just because once I said she looked okay, I'm nuts about her.
Watch it, Gabe. You got a red light.
I see it.
So? Where are you going to take me?
I don't know yet. First, I want to drive over and see Nick for a minute.
No?
Yeah.
Well, crying out loud, what are you going to go see him now for?
Because I want to talk over something with him, that's why.
You always got something to talk over. Can't you ever do anything without Nick? Always Nick, Nick.
You can come in if you want. Carrie will be glad to see you.
Yeah, well, I won't be glad to see her. How long are you going to be?
Only a couple of minutes, that's all.
I'll wait in the car.
Can't you come in?
I said I'll wait in the car. Go ahead, the light's green.
Dames.
One's enough. When do I get my money?
Okay, I'll settle with him. Carrie.
I said I didn't want another drink.
This ain't for a drink. Carrie's the treasurer of the corporation. Carrie.
Yeah, Nick?
Get me $12.50 for Breyer.
$12.50?
That's what he said.
Has he got that much coming?
Yeah. Get it.
Well, come on, Brea.
Why?
Where do you think to get your dough?
You give in too easy to suit me, Nick.
Well, I guess he likes you. Don't you, Nick?
All right, Brea, don't move. Put that gun up. What do you need a gun?
On your feet, Brea.
Look, Nick, you're not doing yourself any good.
On your feet.
That's it. Now, don't try anything. Start backing up. Go ahead, back up. Open the door, Carrie.
Yeah.
All right, Brea.
What's down there?
The cellar. What else?
Can't you guess, honey?
Go ahead. Back down the stairs.
Suppose I don't want to go.
That's no problem.
Shove him.
Now go. Come on, Carrie.
He's out cold.
No good chisel.
What are you kicking him for? Do it cleaner.
I feel like kicking him, that's why.
Shoot him in the head, Nick. Make it good and clean.
Sure. Good and clean. Stand back.
Nick.
I hear it.
Who is it, Nick?
How should I know?
You better answer.
You see who it is. Send him away. Tell him anything.
All right. But you keep your eye on me.
Go on, go on.
Hi, Carrie. Can I see him for a minute?
I don't know. Come on in. I'll ask him.
I can only stay a minute.
I'll see if Nick will talk to you.
Well, he sure ought to.
Okay, okay. Nick?
Yeah?
Tell him I only got a minute, Carrie.
It's Gabe.
Yeah? Come down here a minute, Gabe.
Steps are dark.
Go on, you'll find your way. I thought you'd want to make this a double party, Nick.
What are you doing down here, Nick? Counting your money in the dark, huh?
Over here, Gabe.
Hey, how about a little light?
Turn on the light, Carrie.
Sure.
Oh, that's better. What happened to him?
Everything would have been fine, Gabe, if you hadn't opened up your big mouth.
What did I do?
You talk too much. You and Brea are going to get it together.
Me?
You heard him.
Yeah, Nick, please. Nick, I didn't do nothing. I work with you, Nick. You know I work with you.
You got it coming, Gabe.
Nick, I didn't do nothing, honest. Carrie, tell him not to kill me. Tell him, Carrie, will you, please?
I'm not saying a word.
Nick, I'll do anything you say, Nick. Anything.
Get out of the way.
Nick, you're not going to kill me, are you?
I haven't made up my mind yet. Stand back.
Yeah, sure.
I ought to wait until Brea comes around so he'd feel this.
Go ahead, Nick. Get it over with.
Yeah.
I'll do anything you say, Nick. Honestly.
You talk too much.
Please, Nick, don't. I'll do anything.
Yeah? Think you can get rid of this stiff?
Me?
Yeah, you.
And get rid of the gun, too.
Now?
Sure, now. This ain't any morgue.
But I got Carl outside in the car.
Okay. Take her home, then come back here.
Okay. Okay, Nick, right away.
And be sure you come back. If you don't, I'll know where to find you.
I'll be back, Nick. I'll be back. I'll be back in 20 minutes.
That, Don, was exactly how the Gangland execution occurred. The murder itself was over, but the task of disposing of Brea's body still remained. That and the gang leader's faith in his control over Gabe led to complications the criminals did not see until it was too late.
That was a little rough. You actually, they actually portrayed a murder. I liked it.
That was... Well, shoot him in the head.
I can certainly see why they call this one the golf course murder, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a hole in one, you know?
Oh, wow. That's a double boing.
And I want to toss this out to all the listeners. This is actually original Erie House Radio content, because this, as many of the versions of radio shows that we bring, do have to be edited or modified to attempt to bring you guys the best quality that we can. In case in point, this one too. You can find versions of this out there, but they're going to have some problems with them. And Dave fixes these things up amazingly.
Well, Gar fixed this one up.
I ran across this one. I'll try it. So.
Yeah.
And we had a little trouble
with the Theater 5, and it took a little extra work in the second half. But we got it. Fixed up, very listenable.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, Dave, everybody appreciates everything that you put into making these. And not only that, it's just finding them is a big undertaking, if you know what I mean. And then cleaning them up.
I didn't know that we were going to be able to use the Theater 5s for tomorrow. So I was like, Dave, here's 5 more golf episodes from all-time radio. I had no idea. It was crazy.
We're looking at the clock and time's running out. Dave goes in the background and takes a segment and chops it up somewhere to make everything fit and make sense.
Yeah.
With like minutes to go. It's hilarious.
Yep.
Yeah, well, we do what we can to make sure it's going to work out. That's all.
Yep.
Right.
And this is a violent, again, these are true cases. And although the Dragnets were, they were kind of, in general, kind of boring cases sometimes. Except that Wolfman, the Wolf guy.
Yeah, the first one was a Wolfman.
Yeah, that was pretty rough.
I went onto the internet and tried to find the werewolf things. Like, where did this happen? I never found it.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool that this is and they're portraying it pretty rough. So this is 1948, they probably wouldn't have gotten away with it in the 30s when they started. But, man, you're right. Bang, bang, you're gone. Hole in one.
Oh, yeah. Shoot him in the head. That's kind of graphic. I was like, wow, okay.
I thought so, too, particularly for the era. But it was a rough time in crime during the 30s and 40s.
And it was a woman that was giving the direction. A woman.
Yes.
Shoot him.
She seems to be wearing a skirt in the family.
Yeah.
We are going to have a time problem if we don't get rolling. Let's wrap up the case of the golf course murders from Gangbusters.
Now back to Gangbusters. You were telling us, Chief Sullivan, how the gang leader Nick Manta murdered his confederate Brayer and then ordered another underling to dispose of the body.
That's right, Don. Brayer's body was stripped of all identifying clothing, then loaded into Nick's new Pontiac sedan. Gabe was under orders from Nick to report by telephone as soon as he had accomplished his task.
Get it, Carrie.
Sure. Hello.
Carrie? Gabe, let me talk to Nick.
Just a second. Nick, it's Gabe.
Everything go all right, Gabe?
Yeah, Nick. I dumped the load right on the spot you said. The gun, too, right to the golf course.
Good work, Gabe. Come on back here.
There's one thing, Nick.
What?
Now, look, Nick. It wasn't my fault.
What happened?
It was nothing, Nick.
Well, what was it? Tell me.
It was nothing. Just that after I got rid of the load and wanted to drive away, the car got stuck in the mud.
Stuck in the mud?
Yeah, but it's okay. I got away all right.
You're sure?
Yeah, sure. It was a cinch. With a tow truck.
Tow truck? What tow truck?
Come be help, Nick. Honest, the car was...
Listen, you idiot. You'll be back here in 10 minutes.
Okay, Nick. I'll be there.
Oh, stupid jerk. I know I should have given him the business, too. Dumping a stiff. He gets stuck in the mud. They find the body. They find the tow truck guy. They find Gabe.
So what's the matter with that, Nick?
What isn't the matter with it?
Honey, the cops will think he killed Brayer. They'll have him dead to rights. He was dumping the body, wasn't he? All you have to say is Gabe and Bray were here. They had words and then they left together. And that's the last we saw of either of them.
Well, what about the car? The garage guy will remember my car, sure.
What kind of a problem is that? You just tell Gabe to take a trip in your car. Then report it stolen. If they don't get him, nobody loses. If they do get him, he fries.
Yeah. You've got a head on you, Carrie. I'll see that Gabe starts on his little trip tonight.
You sure got it going over, Captain. A good beating, then four shots in the head.
Yeah. I hate to see it start again. We haven't had a gangster ride since Chippy got us.
Well, he sure wanted to get rid of this one, all right.
Well, if it is a ride job, he's sure to have a record. We'll see what turns up at the fingerprints. Sergeant Mitchell.
Yes, sir.
Stick around until the medical examiner gets here.
Yes, sir.
One fact. You going to make plastic casts of those footprints and lab crews on the way out. And those tire tracks, too.
Good.
That's a pretty deep hole in the mud there. It looks like the murder car, if it was the murder car, had to be towed out.
We'll put a check in the garage first thing, Captain. Well, Frank, I better get back to town. I want to check on this gun. You let me know if there's any identification through fingerprints?
As soon as I hear, Captain. See you later.
So long.
This is a fine thing, Gabe. Get your things together. Throw them in a car. Start out. Drive for who knows where.
Oh, Carla, leave me alone, will you? All day you've been at me.
I never heard of leaving in such a hurry. They just don't do things like that.
You didn't have to come unless you wanted to.
I feel naked without my rings. I packed in such a hurry I even left my rings. That's no way to start in a trip.
How many times do I have to tell you your rings will be there when you get back?
How can I go anyplace without my rings?
I wish you'd have stayed home and sent your rings.
That's the way you feel about it. I'll go back.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. You're going to stay a while in Richmond?
I guess so. I got some business there for Nick.
Going to wire my landlady to send my rings there?
No.
Oh, please.
I said no. Nick don't want nobody to know I'm out on this trip. Nobody.
Captain Bailey speaking.
Lieutenant Frank, after we got an identification on that murder victim.
Oh, good.
The fingerprint showed up. He's Joe Breyer, has a record for car theft.
Breyer, huh?
That's right, Captain. He was handled a little while back, suspected of being part of that car theft ring, but Auto Theft Bureau couldn't make anything stick against him.
Is there an address on him?
He's got a room down in Brooklyn.
Okay, pick me up, Frank. We'll go by there. Maybe we'll turn up with something.
Well, go on, Carrie. What else?
Wait till I turn the page, Nick. Yeah, the two boys ran across the body as they were walking across the rain-soaked golf course.
Mm-hmm.
A 25-caliber automatic of Belgian make was found nearby. Police would not say whether this was the gun that killed Breyer until ballistics tests were completed.
Well, so far, Carrie, so good.
I can't make up my mind, Nick, whether I'd like to see him catch Gabe driving your car or whether I'd like to see him get away.
Well, either way, Carrie, it doesn't make any difference. We're in the clear. That's the important thing.
Mm. Yeah, there's only one thing about this. Getting rid of Breyer is okay. Gabe, too. But it kind of puts a crimp in the organization. We can't make dough out of stolen cars if we haven't got people.
Don't worry about it. We'll get new people, better people. Cops are getting too close to Breyer and Gabe anyway. We got lots of cash. We're sitting pretty. Don't worry about it.
Okay, Nick. I'm not the worrying kind.
Well, Captain, we found the garage man that hauled that car out of the mud near the spot. It was Sunday night. Green Pontiac sedan, two-tone, brand new.
Good work, Frank.
And he made a note of the plates. The car is registered in the name of Nick Manta. Reported stolen Monday morning.
Nick Manta?
Rings a bell, huh? Well, it ought to. The auto theft boy's been trying to hang a stolen car deal on him for months.
Ah, I thought I recognized the name.
Yeah, Captain. Seeing that Breyer had a record as a car thief.
Okay, Frank. What do you say we go out and see Mr. Nick Manta?
I'm ready. Let's.
Okay, just a second. What do you want?
I want to talk to Nick Manners.
Well, what do you want to talk to him about?
Open up. This is our police officers.
Oh. Well, why didn't you say so? Come on in.
Thanks.
Nick.
Yeah?
You got company. Cops.
Who are you?
I'm Carrie. Nick's girl.
I hope you gentlemen have come to tell me you found my car.
Yes, Nick, that's one thing on our mind, your car. And that's too bad about Brer.
I was going to call you.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, maybe I got some information for you guys.
Every little bit helps.
Brer was here Sunday night.
The medical examiner thinks he was killed sometime Sunday night or Monday morning.
There was another one here, too. Gabe Miller.
Two of them worked for you?
We had dealings.
In the stolen car racket?
I'm a legitimate garage man. You can't prove nothing different.
Yeah, we'll try. But for now, what about your guests Sunday?
Well, they got pretty drunk, didn't they, Gary?
Uh-huh.
And the next morning, my car was missing. I reported it.
Yes, I know.
Well, then I read about Brer. Gabe hasn't shown up since. Then tonight, I noticed the gun I had around the house was missing. A Belgian automatic.
25 caliber?
Yeah, that's the one. I figured Gabe took it, took my car, and killed Brer. Isn't that right, Carrie?
That's what he figured.
Yes, I suppose that's about the size of it. Why didn't you report this information sooner?
Well, you know how it is, Captain. Nobody likes to get mixed up in these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lieutenant. Let's go. Captain, come on.
Yes, sir.
We're sure glad we were of some help.
You're not planning on taking any trips, are you?
Oh, no. No, no. We'll be right here.
That'd be a good idea. You can never tell when we might need you again. Just stick around. Come on, Lieutenant.
Bye.
We're not going to leave those two on the loose, Captain.
For a while. But get the men on them and keep them in sight. And in the meantime, Frank, get descriptions out on the car and Gabe Miller. Also, I want a complete report on Gabe's contacts around town.
Right.
Attention, all points. Description of car believed driven by man previously described. 1946 Pontiac sedan. Painted green, two-tone. New York license 3P5612. All departments requested to be on alert for this car and detain occupants. Notify Chief of Detectives, New York City. Captain Bailey.
Brian, Captain, I've been checking up on Gabe's girlfriend. She left on a trip Monday.
Company.
But listen to this. Her landlady got a wire from her this morning. She left some rings here. The landlady should mail them to her.
Where?
The Suites Hotel, Richmond, Virginia.
That's our break, Frank. How would you like to go down to Richmond instead of the rings?
Captain, I'd like it fine. To gangbusters.
Gabe, let's go see if there's any mail.
Mail? Who are you expecting mail from?
Nobody. I guess I just left to look in.
Forget about the mail. Let's go have some breakfast.
Okay, I'll look in the mail later.
We don't know a storm in Richmond. Nobody knows we're here and she's looking for mail.
What?
You didn't send for those rings after I told you not to.
Gabe, I just had to have them.
No good. I ought to break every bone in your body. Come on, we're getting packed and getting out of here. Come on. I should have known better than bring you along.
That's far enough, Gabe.
Hey, who are you?
You're under arrest. Going back to New York. Charge is murder.
Hey, now look.
Come on. Get your things together. You're going back to New York.
I'm sorry to have kept you waiting so long, Mr. Manton. And you too, miss.
Oh, we didn't mind. Did we, Nick?
Oh, no, Captain. We can help, okay. Brea was our friend.
Yes, well, I've just finished questioning Gabe in my office.
And he admitted the murder?
No, quite to the contrary. He accuses the two of you.
Us?
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. And he's sticking to his story. He said you shot Brea in the cellar of your house and forced him to dispose of the body.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
It sounds that way, doesn't it?
If
I was the killer, do you think I'd let a dope like Gabe in on it? Do you think I'd report my car stolen?
Well, you've got a point there. Would you mind stepping into my office?
Oh, sure, anything.
This way, please. Gabe's in there.
Oh, that rotten heel out.
I'll have to ask you to control yourself. I don't want a disturbance.
All right, Captain, for you.
Nick.
Sit down, Gabe.
There they are, the dirty double-crosses. They did it.
Quiet, Gabe. Would you have those chairs there, please?
Of course.
Thank you. Gabe, Nick, and Carrie deny all your accusations. And I'm afraid that at the moment, I'm inclined to believe them.
They're lying. That's all they do is lie. I'm telling you straight, they killed him.
Excuse me. Certainly, Captain. Captain Bailey.
Frank, Captain. We're all finished out here.
Oh, what'd you find out?
We tore the cellar drain apart, Captain. The test showed everything you thought it would.
Good. Come back into the office and make out a report.
Okay, Captain. So long.
Well, as I was saying, we've got the case washed up. I'm going to ask the district attorney to file formal murder charges.
Hey, you see, Gabe? You do something like this, you pay.
I'd like to get my hands on you, Nick.
No, I'm afraid you misunderstand. The murder charges will be filed against you, Nick, and Carrie.
Who are you kidding?
You see?
Yes. While you've been waiting out in the reception room, my men were out at your house. Traces of blood and human hair showed up in your basement drain. Breyer's blood and hair.
No, look.
Shut up, Carrie. I've got an explanation for everything.
No further explanations are necessary. If you have a story, you can tell it in court.
So, Don, the criminals were tried and convicted of first-degree murder. Nick was sentenced to death in the electric chair. Carrie was given life imprisonment. Gabe was convicted as an accessory.
Thank you, Chief Sullivan, for giving us an insight into how police conduct a murder investigation. And gangbusters, congratulations to all the police officers who were responsible for bringing these murderers to justice.
Hey, we're bringing you radio just like gangbusters.
Yeah, that's a term that gets used from time to time. You're coming at it, you like gangbusters. Yeah.
Yep.
Which is almost more of a...
Erie House hastily presents Gar's moral of the story.
Hair in your drain sometimes does more than stop up the sink. Sometimes it will sink you.
It's not quite a sink, but it's close. In some households.
Well, there was mention of a drain.
And we got even more. In the drain. More radio for you tonight.
See, if they only used Drano, they'd have gotten away with it.
Yep. But no.
If indeed Drano was on the market in 48.
I don't know. Now that you mentioned it.
I don't know. I use biological decomposer. I don't think you can even buy that anymore.
No. You have to get a... there was some type of comedy special. No, it was a comedy series about a lady, a female person that cleaned up murder scenes, and she had to get chemicals. But you have to be licensed in order to get the stuff.
Is that what's showing now? The cleaning lady that's showing on Fox now? Is that it?
Yeah. Now, it requires more than bleach. Apparently, blood has stuff in it, iron or whatever, and bleach doesn't touch it. So you can use bleach. It might get rid of most of it, but if you take a special light and spray, it'll show up or something like that.
The police
you call
mop
her
up the crime. She mops up the scene.
Got to call her on line one, Dale.
We do. Uh-oh. I'm almost afraid. Good evening, and welcome to Erie House. Who dat?
Hello. Hello.
It's CW.
Well.
Hello. How are you?
Thank you for joining us.
Great. Thanks for calling in. Joining
600.
Us.
Yeah, happy 600. Happy, just chime in and say happy 600.
We are six hundred shows, the three old hacks,
mm-hmm. which is what golfers are too. They're called hacks a lot of times.
And if that's our pack of Winstons, I'm always hacking.
Oh, and to the guys getting away with blood and everything, it's called Luminol, that stuff that you spray when blood is not cleaned up properly.
Right.
Of course, there are ways, there are chemicals around that that will nullify that, but that's for another time in how to get away with the murder.
Exactly.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Available at stores now.
I don't know where you go to get that.
I don't know. It's the Kate Tell How to Get Away with Murder set with a special offer on Chia Pet.
Yeah, there you go. Chia Pet and Luminol.
I think they're a subsidiary of Acme. You know, where the coyote gets all this stuff.
You can get it at Godfathers R Us.
There you go.
Right. You can get some pizza from Godfathers. You can get some Luminol. Come on down.
Hey, did you run out of room in your trunk? Here's another way to get rid of the unwanted guests.
Right.
Hey, we got it now with a special on Scotty's Tupperware. If they can't make it, there you go.
And we have a sale on Guido's Lye. 6 bags for $20.
Yeah. That's to get rid of bombs, isn't it?
And if Guido's still alive, is Guido still alive? He'll keep lying for another $20.
That's right. Or we'll pick him up in the cornfield with a couple of baseball bets.
Send me product from the sponsors of neverfoundhopper.com.
There you go. All right. We've got even more golf radio for you tonight. Two more shows and count them. And we might as well jump right into Crisis. Now, this title scares me.
Yeah,
are you sure this is about golf?
Yeah, it's not about golf. But the title is a little scary for a family show. But
yes, I thought it was like Bob, Carol, Ted, and Alice or something.
Oh, my
God. 1, 2, 3, hello. That's four.
The title's called Foursome. From the show Crisis. No, a foursome is like, see, you can play like two people on golf. It's just to keep the game rolling, even when there's not a tournament. There's just people playing on public courses.
Isn't bridge also played with four people?
In golf, sometimes if you go by yourself, like I did often, you would just hook up with strange people and golf with them. There's a certain courtesy
Hook up, you say?
Not like
yeah,
on a date.
And then
he's
talking
about you look up to play golf. It's nearly platonic golf. Platonic golf. Honest, honey, I was at the golf course.
Oh, I don't have that.
And you're really killing it tonight. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Some card games are you need four people to play, I think.
Yes. So our title tonight is Foursome from Crisis. And we got an original broadcast date for this bad boy.
February 7th, 1974. A newer type of radio show for Erie House. In the 70s.
Episode number 12. Yep.
Ooh.
Sooner or later, when you least expect it, there comes a point of no return. A dead end from which there seems no escape. A moment in time. A moment of crisis. Meet Alex Oakland. Occupation, attorney at law. Married, happily, for 18 years. Hobby, golf. In fact, Alex is on his way to an unseasonal golf game right now, a game hastily hatched at the sign of an unexpectedly sunny February afternoon that Barbara will understand. It's one of those rare opportunities a man has to shuck the office for a couple of hours at the end of a day and meet for some fun with his good friends. But this is not to be the golf game Alex is anticipating, for his foursome is about to be canceled by an uninvited player, Death. In a few moments, we begin tonight's tale of suspense on Crisis. It's called Foursome. Alex noses his car into the near-empty parking lot of the Clover Vista Golf Club, pulls up alongside another car as its driver gets out and waves.
Hi, Sid. Been waiting long?
Just got here about 5 minutes ago. Hey, it's just going to be the three of us, I guess. Pete Lawrence said he couldn't make it.
Oh, rats. And just before I left, Ralph called me back and said he was afraid he'd be tied up and to go ahead without him.
So it's just the two of us?
Guess so.
Well, we sure are going to have the place to ourselves. And I was going to call it off, too. Only I figured I could use the exercise.
You? What about me? I got 10 years on you. I really need the exercise.
Hey, Alex, what do you say we play just 9 holes? I might have a good thing cooking if I can get out of here about 5.
Oh? Business?
Yeah, monkey business.
Monkey business?
Ah, you know. Hey, the greens look darn good.
Yeah, they keep them up nice. You want a cart or should we just carry him?
No, I'm going to carry mine, okay?
Fine. Like I say, I need the exercise.
Nice shot. What'd you get on this hole?
4. I'm really out of shape. How'd you do?
I parted. Want to rest a minute?
No, I'm fine. You running late?
No. Why?
Well, you keep checking your watch.
No, we'll get our 9 in by 5 o'clock.
We don't have to play 9.
No, that's fine.
Must be a pretty important engagement.
Said it was monkey business. Little gal who's expecting a visit from me before her old man returns.
Oh? I must be getting old.
You're only as old as you feel, Alex, old kid.
No, what I was thinking was how shocked I was when you said what you did just now.
Shocked? You, a lawyer, shocked?
Sid, for gosh sakes, you're a married man with a family. You still running around like a high school kid?
Can I help it if I'm irresistible to women?
Well, it's none of my business. Let's see, I guess I go first on the next one.
Uh-oh.
Doggone slice. Oh, look at it. Right into those trees.
Well, watch me join you.
Hey, nice one. Straight down the middle.
I'll walk down toward the trees with you.
Nah, that's all right. I'll find it by myself.
Hey, old buddy. You upset with me?
What makes you say that?
Come on, Alex. Something's eating you, and it isn't your golf game. You're playing better than usual today. I know what it is. You don't approve of my little extracurricular activities. Is that it?
Oh, look, why don't you just come out and call it what it is? At least you can avoid being a hypocrite about it. You're cheating on your wife, which may be common, but which is a damn shame.
Well, we all have our weaknesses. Mine is adultery. Is that the legal word for it?
It's the biblical word for it. I think that takes precedence.
Well, it takes two to tango, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Listen, I'm not excusing anything, but my marriage hasn't been exactly exciting for the last 5 years. And it happens that the young lady I'm seeing has the same type of problem with her marriage. So?
So, two wrongs make a right, huh?
Oh, geez, you can be more original than that, Alex.
Yeah, I suppose I can.
In fact, you know them both. You'd have to agree with me. Lovely gal, in her early 30s, married to a guy older than you are. 50-something. I mean, do I have to draw you a picture?
I know them.
Very well indeed.
Not the Samuels. Ralph and Betty?
How about that, huh?
I don't believe it.
Why not?
Well, Ralph is one of my best friends. One of your best friends, too. He was going to be right here with us.
So?
You really don't have any principles at all, do you?
What difference does it make?
What difference does it make? Ralph's a friend of yours, that's what. He trusts you. My Lord, Terrence, you're nothing but an animal.
All right, Alex, what's with this sanctimonious bit? Are you telling me you never lusted after anyone since you and Barbara got married?
That's beside the point. Some people can exercise some self-control. That's what separates man from the ape.
Don't give me your standard morality lecture, buddy. The main difference between you and me is I'm doing what you haven't got the guts to do. Talk about your hypocrite. Oh, don't shake your club at me, Alex. I might faint.
So help me, Sid. I never felt so much like murder in my life.
You ought to see yourself, Alex. Standing there like a 6-year-old kid with a broomstick in his hand.
Do you know what you're doing to Ralph Samuels?
Look, put your club back in the bag. I assume the game is over.
Get your hands off this golf club. Yes, the game is over. If you could see the misery that troops through my office, the beaten wives, the homeless children, the deadbeat, rotten scoundrels who marry and have children and keep on living like alley cats, and you're one of them.
Take it easy, will you, Alex? You're going to have a stroke out here.
You filth, you rotten swine.
I think you're off your rocker.
Oh, yeah?
Now, for the last time, Alex, put the club down. Put it down, man.
Are you going to see Betty tonight?
It's none of your business who I see, Alex. You're a lawyer, not a judge.
You're still going to see her?
Yes, I'm still going to see her, and nothing you've said is going to...
Oh, my God, forgive me. Alex Oakland is like a man in a trance. He knows what he must do, what the law requires him to do, but he obeys an even stronger impulse. He runs to his car in the parking lot, drives away, leaving the cold February night to fall on the still body of Sid Tarrant, halfway down the seventh fairway. He drives aimlessly through the streets of the quiet suburb. At 6 o'clock, he turns into his own driveway, drives into the garage, gets out, takes the clubs from the back seat, selects the number 3 iron, examines it carefully in the headlight's glare. Satisfied, he puts the club back into the bag, wipes the head of it thoroughly, and makes his way through the breezeway and into the kitchen.
That you, dear?
Yeah.
You boys freeze to death out there?
No. No, it was fine.
I've got spare ribs for dinner. You want carrots and broccoli, okay?
What?
Broccoli?
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
How's the fellas?
Huh? Oh, they're fine. Well, Pete and Ralph couldn't make it after all.
Oh, so it was just you and Sid.
Yeah. Just me and Sid.
How's your game?
It's off. Not so hot.
I wasn't sure when you were coming home, so I started the carrots too early. They're overcooked. I know how you like them to be a little crisp.
No, that's all right, honey.
Oh, will you get that, Alex?
Sure. Hello? Oh, hi, Kay.
Oh, who is it?
It's Kay Tarrant.
Oh.
What? Yes, we did. Oh, we were through by about 5? Yes, 5 o'clock. What? No, he didn't mention where he was going after that. Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, you bet I will. Right, Kay. Good night.
What did she want?
She was worried about Sid. He's not home yet.
So I wonder if he has to take a penalty stroke for putting a divot in that guy's head.
Yeah. He's just trying to play it where the ball laid, that's all.
Yeah. Wow. Anybody catch the irony there? He was just telling the guy he was an animal and couldn't control his emotions. And then he killed him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a lawyer. He should kill him in court, you know?
Damn, there you go.
Wish they were dead. Well, they wish they were dead.
The nine iron.
Go ahead.
So civilized.
Yeah.
So civilized.
Yeah. Somebody like that shouldn't be engaged in marriage. I mean, what the heck? But, you know, that's crazy.
It's, yeah.
I never understood that.
Well, he was not that good of a lawyer. If he was enterprising, he would have gone to Seth's spouse and say, your spouse is doing a little something, something on the side. Here's my business card.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one way to deal with it.
I mean, if you're going to find someone that will put up with all your stuff, they'll go as far as to say, I do, I'll stick with you, and then you go and do something like that. That's beyond my understanding. I don't understand that. Why you would be looking elsewhere, I don't get that. I don't know.
Because it's
you know, a lot of it happens a lot, from what I understand. So.
Boredom. You want to adventure?
Blame it on the bossa nova.
Yeah.
There you go.
What the hell?
Why, isn't that a thing? Like they call it like the 40-year itch, and you go buy a car and things get better. I don't know.
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons people go astray, and that's one of them. Another name for the 40-year itch might be a midlife crisis, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Some people, I guess, want to relive their youth or something. I don't know.
Yeah. My outlook would be you got lucky if you know, someone, you know, agreed to stick with you. Why mess that up? I don't know.
Yeah. What are the chances you'll find two?
Yeah.
Oh, another definition I was thinking of is just plain stupid.
That too, yeah. They don't realize what's going on or what they have.
That is possible.
And so, you fix them. Another thing is this is a disjoint friendship where you've got a group of people and one of them is living outside of the common think and drink of the others.
There you go. Welcome to the racetrack.
Yeah. I know. There's a racetrack
usually
next to our golf course.
It's golf, not racing.
You see the police coming by my place, but no, it's a racetrack today.
Racetrack.
The announcer in this show, Jim French, is also the director and the writer of most of these. He, interesting thing about this, 1972 through 1978, Jim French radio programs were a major contemporary component of a mix of radio programs that also included mainly shows from the golden age of radio. They were aired on KVI Seattle during much of the 70s. These radio shows were aired nightly under the umbrella title that was called KVI Theater of the Mind. Jim's shows were generally aired on Thursday nights. At the time, KVI was part of the Golden West Radio Network, KMPC Los Angeles, KSFO San Francisco, and KEX Portland, and KVI Seattle. The Golden West Radio Network was owned by the radio's singing cowboy, Gene Autry. There you go.
Back in that saddle again.
Crisis was the third Jim French created radio series to air on the KVI, the Tower Playhouse, the short-run anthology series. Those initial Jim French series ran for 10 episodes, followed by 49 episodes of The Adventures of Dameron. And then on to Crisis. When he stopped Crisis, he went on to do a year of Harry Nile investigations and kind of finished up his programming with a program called Imagination in Theater. So that's really kind of the history of the guy who was really the mastermind of so many wonderful radio dramas in the 70s during Dale's silver age of radio. I really love
that term
that you call it.
It really is. And real quick, before we wrap up with this foursome, I read an interesting article in the Washington Post, of all places. Not something I normally read, but anyway, they were postulating, is there possibly a second golden age of radio that is beginning now with the dawn of audiobooks and stars getting involved with reading the audiobooks and people wanting to hear audio stories? You know, above and beyond the old-time radio, even new stories.
Well, because of the age, they did this in comics. They had a golden age, a silver age, and a bronze age as we were getting closer and closer to real time. So maybe this would be a copper age. I don't know.
Tin.
Titanium.
Eerie House is the tin age. Pewter.
Plastic.
Pewter age.
Everything is plastic. The plastic age.
Yeah. We're not.
We're
going
to work our way down to the tinfoil age of radio. Yeah.
Tinfoil. I'll let you borrow my hat. All right, let's wrap up. Grace's foursome. We'll be back right after this.
Aren't you hungry?
I guess not.
Well, hand me your plate. I can wrap up your spirits. Oh, can you go?
I'll go. Mr. Alexander Oakland?
Yes.
Are you Mr. Oakland?
Yes.
I'm Captain Bach, Detective Division.
Yes? Well, how do you do? Come on in.
Oh, thank you. Oh, you folks just having dinner?
No, just finished. Come on in here in the living room.
We're investigating the death of a man I believe you know, Mr. Oakland. Mr. Sidney Tarrant, T-A-R-R-A-N-T.
Sid Tarrant? Yes, I know him.
Had you heard anything about his death?
Why, we played golf together just this afternoon.
That's what Mrs. Tarrant told me. And who else was playing with you?
Why, but actually, no one.
No one else was with you?
Well, no. We'd expected the other two men we always play with. We're a foursome.
And they are?
Well, but you see, they couldn't make it today.
Yeah, I see. Can you give me their names?
Peter Lawrence and Ralph Samuels.
L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E.
Yes, and Ralph Samuels. S-A-M-U-E-L-S.
They live here in town?
Yes, they're in the phone book.
Okay. Now, I'd just like to get a couple of other things, Mr. Oakland. When did you last see Mr. Tarrant?
Well, it was when I left to come on home.
You were still alone, just the two of you?
Yes.
And what time was that event?
Well, it was just right around 5. 5 o'clock.
All right, fine. You don't know any reason why Mr. Tarrant might have been killed, do you?
Killed?
Yes, sir.
Murdered?
We're investigating it.
No. No, I don't know why anyone would want to kill Sid Tarrant. That's awful. Excuse me.
Well, that's about all I have.
I'll go see who it is.
Alex, I'm sorry to bother you, but have you heard what's happened?
I've heard. Come on in. Captain, this is one of our foursome, Peter Lawrence. Captain Bach of the police.
Captain, I just came over to see if Alex here had heard about poor Sid.
Mm-hmm. I was going to stop over and see you, too, Mr. Lawrence. You had intended to play golf with Mr. Tarrant and Mr. Oakland today?
That's right. But at the last minute, I had to cancel out because of business. I had to see a client.
And you didn't for any reason drop over to the golf course, then?
No.
It seems, Peter, that I was the last person to see Sid alive. My wife will get it.
I'll ask you what I asked Mr. Oakland. Do you know if Mr. Tarrant had any enemies? Any reason for being killed?
I didn't really know him that well. Mostly just as a golf partner.
Yeah, I see.
That's right. I think Ralph and I knew Sid a lot better than Pete did.
In fact, I think you introduced him to me. It was last summer. No, it was 2 summers ago.
Excuse me. Alex, I couldn't help overhearing. Sid's dead.
That's right, Barbara. Sid's been murdered. This officer is questioning us about anything we may have seen or known.
I don't know what's happened. Oh, the call is for you. It's Ralph Sandals, and he sounds half crazy. He wants to talk to you right now.
Oh, my Lord. Can you excuse me, Captain?
Certainly.
When you get off the phone, I'll call poor Kay. Oh, my heaven, what do you say to a woman whose husband's just been killed? I've got to say something.
Hello, Ralph. I know, now calm down. What? Where are you? Yes, come on over. Yes, as soon as you want to. Well, that's all right, Ralph. See you in a few minutes.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'll leave my card.
and if you should want to contact me for any reason. All right, Captain. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, I guess there's no reason for me to stick around either.
Well, stay if you like. Barbara can fix you some coffee.
No, that's all right. Alex, if it becomes necessary, would you think it advisable for me to have a lawyer?
Not at this point. Nobody's accused you of anything.
No, that's right. Well, if I needed one, I'd like you.
Sure, Pete.
Horrible thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
Well, thanks again, Alex. Good night.
Good night. Ralph, come on in.
Are we alone?
Yes, we are. Barbara's in the kitchen on the phone with Kay. Come into the living room.
Alex, I'm retaining you as of now to handle my defense.
You haven't been charged, have you?
No, but I'm the logical guy. I don't know whether you knew it or not, but I've known for a couple of weeks about my wife and Sid. They were cozy.
You knew about it?
Which makes me a pretty good suspect.
Well, it might give you a motive, but that's not enough.
Yeah? Listen to the fix I'm in. You invite me to play golf this afternoon. Instead, I have to drive 60 miles out of town to where a customer's truck is broken down. But by the time I get there, he's fixed it himself and left. The point is, I haven't got an alibi from where I was from 3 until 5:30 this afternoon. Nobody saw me. I didn't talk to anyone who could testify I was 60 miles from where Sid got killed. Alex, I could get life.
You won't get life. You won't get charged. You didn't do it.
Yeah, but who did?
It's the next morning. After an all but sleepless night, Alex Oakland walks into his law office to face an unexpected and unpleasant surprise.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Oakland. Your secretary said it'd be all right to wait for you. Do you have a few minutes?
Why, right now?
Well, all right. Come into my private office. Oh, this is a nice room. Have you read all these books?
What is it you want, Captain?
I just want to check your statement. Now, last night, you said you last saw Mr. Tarrant as you drove out of the parking lot at the golf course.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, that's what I thought you told me. I'm just trying to figure out how come his body was lying on the 8th fairway when we found him.
The 8th?
Right.
Oh.
Is there something wrong?
Oh, no. No.
Which means for some reason he must have gone way back onto the golf course.
Who's that? Oh, Pete. What are you doing here?
I hope you'll forgive me, Mr. Oakland. I asked Mr. Lawrence to join us here.
You did? Oh, well, sure.
Okay to come in?
Oh, sure. Shut the door, will you? What's this all about, Captain?
I want to ask you something, Mr. Lawrence. Was Mr. Tarrant having an affair with your wife?
Now, wait a minute. Just a minute. Mr. Lawrence has asked me to represent him, and I don't think he should answer that question.
No, it's all right, Alex. Yes, Captain. Sid and my wife were friendly.
Pete, as your lawyer, I advise you to say nothing more.
It's no use, Alex. They know.
They know what?
That I finished him.
What are you talking about?
I went back to the golf course last night. I was able to get away, and I thought maybe I could pick up you and Sid and Ralph on the back nine. When I got there was just Sid's car. And on the 7th fairway, I saw him. I saw him crawling around on his hands and knees. So I ran up to see what he was doing.
Pete? So help me? Alex went out of his gourd. He hit me with one of his irons. I can't stand up. I've been out cold for I don't know how long.
Good Lord, Sid. Hey, listen, lay right down. I'm going to call my wife and have her bring the station wagon over, and we're going to get you to the hospital. The second I told my wife what had happened, I knew. She broke into tears. She got hysterical. She called him Sid, and I thought they barely knew each other. So I went back onto the course. By this time, he'd crawled to the middle of the eighth fairway. I still had my clubs with me, and I asked him, nicely, quietly. I asked him what he and my wife had been up to. And he told me, and I took an iron and...
And you finished the job Mr. Oakland had started?
Yes.
Oh, Pete. Pete, I had no idea.
I guess you'd been sweating out a murder charge, huh, Alex? Don't sweat it anymore. You're home free.
Not quite. Mr. Oakland, I'm going to book you on suspicion of assault with intent to kill. And Mr. Lawrence, the charge is murder. Now I'm going to read you your rights. You have the right to remain silent. You have the right to consult an attorney. You do not wish to select an attorney.
What a way to break up a foursome. Now we'll never know whether Alex was ever able to correct that slice. Oh, well, they're apt to give up the game entirely, Alex and Pete and Sid. Which leaves poor Ralph Samuels. But before he joins another foursome, I'll bet he finds out what kind of swinging his partners are doing. Our cast included Bob Wright, Mike Reynolds, Mike McGuire, Ben Gorlick, John Roeder, and Pat French. This is Jim French, your producer-director, inviting you to join us next time for Crisis.
See, there was swinging. I told you it was one of those stories. Swinging foursome. Yep. I'm so ashamed. Or proud of
Crisis is distributed by the Nostalgia Broadcasting Corporation, Post Office Box 10914, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
The difference between a bat and a club: bats fly, clubs kill. Or, in regards to golf, don't confess too quickly. If you're lucky, someone might beat you to it.
Hey, yo. The perfect patsy. A willing patsy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was weird.
That's pretty good. A show from the 70s. And our next one's relatively modern, too, isn't it?
No.
Let's see.
No, no. It depends on your definition of relatively modern. But, yeah, no.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what do I know?
But
I'm here
a little long in the tooth, this one.
Yeah. The,
how many years did Dark Fantasy
supernatural...
run?
What's that?
How many years did Dark Fantasy run?
It
How
was
long?
Just 31 episodes.
That was
and
it? Oh. Oh, crazy.
That was it. 31 episodes coming out of WKY out of Oklahoma City.
KY.
And heard on NBC stations on Friday nights. Yes.
Yes.
It was also the original home of the Mysterious Traveler, so all kinds of fun came out of WKY.
Yeah. Dale, this radio show came out in 42, probably before the invention of KY that you're juggling about.
I said nothing.
No, I just heard you giggle.
Bitter a bit, yes.
Yeah.
Like a child.
KY,
You see what you've done, Dale? You started that.
It's the child in me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you finally got over Hyman Brown, so I gotta have to
Yeah, really.
On that one.
And,
so there
and,
are, I'll never forget the first time I heard him. I'll never forget the first time I heard him.
But in my personal archives of albums, they're a lot of fun. One of them features the Hammond organ, and the guy that was playing it, his name was Dick Hyman, you know, and that was his name. You know, words are crazy. So
they tell me to behave, but they lead me down these dark paths. It's like dangling a carrot.
I am innocent with what I say.
Don't do it. Do it.
Gentlemen, do I have to get the ruler? Do I have to get the ruler out, gentlemen? Or the ruler?
Yeah.
It was almost like a double dog dare.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I really enjoy the works of that guy. I just try not to announce his name too much because people giggle. Real guy.
Real guy, real name. Right.
Yeah, real guy, real name. Why am I? I'm struggling here. This is weird. Audio. Oh, there we go.
Yep. So dark fantasy encounters with supernatural beings, scientists, and adventures in mythical places. Just some of the themes featured in dark fantasy. We have some mythical beings in this one too, don't we? Don't we, Gar?
Yes, we do. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Yep. All kinds of stuff.
Has an intriguing title.
I mean, it fits with dark fantasy.
I had a dark fantasy one, but it would just get Dale in trouble if I.
Yeah. Well, see, one of my favorite guys that is on guitar is Dick Dale. He's a lot of fun.
Hey. Watch that.
Who doesn't like Surfabilly? Right.
Calling me names. I didn't know that guy. He did. No, he was a surfer guitarist though. I do like his
Surfabilly.
Music.
Yeah. Tribal Thunder, King of the Surf, guitar, all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
Well, you two should be ashamed of yourself. You're corrupting the morals of our poor innocent Dave. Poor Dave.
Oh, yes. I think there's a difference between being naive and being innocent. Two different things there.
Yeah. I'm innocent. I'm naive. I finally did find it. Let me see. Where are you guys? You're over there. There's an album called The Man from O, period, R, period, G, period, A, period, N, and it's Dick Hyman. And he does all kinds of spacey-type songs on there in conjunction with the Hammond organ, which is definitely a nod to old-time radio because there's a lot of organ music in there.
That there is.
Oh, gosh, is that a ripoff from The Man from Uncle, The Man from Oma?
Yes, it is. In fact, he does a theme in there on that thing. Yeah, it is. The Man from Oregon. Wait, not to be confused with Orkin, which is a bug company, but yeah.
Yes. This one's entitled The Cup of Gold.
Yes.
Cup of Gold.
Well, let's begin with part one from Dark Fantasy.
Original air date? May 8th, 1942.
Episode number 25.
Yeah.
Deciding shot of the tournament, ladies and gentlemen. Truman Davis, now champion, has just sunk his last putt on the last green to turn in the amazing score of 68. Jan Mason, the contender, is on a green with a 66, which in itself is even more amazing. Mason's ball lies at the very edge of the green. Looks like tough going. Should he sink the ball in one more stroke, turning a 67 as compared with a 68 by Davis, we'll have a brand new champion. Should Jan Mason require two strokes, he would tie up the match, and three strokes would defeat him. And now Mason has just stepped into position. He's bending over the ball. He eyes the center of the green with that masterly dead-eye precision of his. Changes his footing slightly. There's not a sound from the spectators. Every breath is hell and excitement. This great contender prepares for victory or defeat. He pulls back the putter slightly, eyes the distance to the hole once more, takes deadly aim, hits the ball, and...
It's in! He made it! The ball's in for the win for Jan Mason, and the crowd goes wild. It's a new champion, ladies and gentlemen, Jan Mason, the boy who came up the hard way to defeat the one and only Truman Davis. For five consecutive years, the master of it all. And here's the irony. Almost 11 years ago, when Jan Mason first thought of golf, he acted as caddy for Truman Davis, the man he defeated for the championship here today. Oh, the crowd has completely engulfed the two participants. And it's a little difficult for us to see them now. Oh, there they are, shaking hands and smiling. We're trying to make our way over to them for a few words from both Mason and Davis. Oh, will you pardon me, please? Pardon me, lady. We're trying to get through. I beg your pardon, please. We'd like to get a few words from the two gentlemen. We're trying our best, ladies and gentlemen, to make our way through this excited throng, but... Ah, there's the Gold Cup. The Gold Cup for the tournament winner. It's just been handed to one of the official referees by a beautiful platinum-haired girl. The referee is about to make the presentation. No, something's wrong. The referee turns to his fellow judges. They're talking excitedly. We can't make out yet what's happening. The men are examining the Gold Cup. Oh, it's flashing in the sunlight. Really a beautiful thing. Wait a minute. What's that? Something's happened. It's Jan Mason. He's been shot. Someone shot the new champion. He's holding his left side. He's strangling. He's grabbed the Gold Cup. He's fallen out. Jan Mason is lying on the final three. The Gold Cup.
Hello. I ask you not to disturb me, clerk. I don't care if there is someone to see me. What? Who? Lee Sanders, the radio announcer? Well, tell him I'm not in. I don't care if he is standing there watching you talk to him. Tell him you're talking to the maid. What? Hello. Who's speaking? But I was talking to the room clerk. Now, look here, Mr. Saunders. What do you want with me? No, I'm sorry. I don't have time to see you. No, I have nothing to discuss with you. Goodbye. Oh, I said he wanted to talk to me about the murder. He saw me. He's suspicious. He knows something. I must get out of here. I'll hurry and pack my things. No time to pack. I just put on my coat, purse. Hat. I'll carry the hat. All right. Oh, no. Not the front way. The back.
Going somewhere, miss?
Oh. Who are you?
I'm the fellow you hung up on.
What do you want?
I figured you'd try to run out the back way.
I don't know you. Let me by.
Oh, no. Back inside. We're going to talk.
There's nothing I have to discuss with you.
I'm afraid there is. A little matter of murder.
How much do you know?
Plenty. Come on, inside.
But I...
Inside. Now.
I have nothing to say to you.
You think not?
Not a thing in the world. I demand that you leave here at once before I call the police.
Oh, that way, is it? Very well. There you are.
What do you mean?
Take the receiver. Shall I dial the number?
What number?
The police, of course.
Hang up that phone.
So, you're not as willing to call the police here as you pretend.
How did you find me?
Oh, I was lucky.
What do you mean?
You were in a stop sign downtown just after you'd come from the golf links. It was my car. You were almost hit.
Oh.
No one saw you leave the golf links. No one knew who you were. You weren't the girl who was officially in charge of the gold prize cup.
No.
And what's more, the cup that was given to the chief referee wasn't the official prize cup.
No.
Instead, it was some fantastic thing. A cup of pure gold, but covered with some sort of ancient writing. Well...
Yes.
Now, look here. I'm a radio reporter, and I've got a story here. I want to know what it is.
I don't know the explanation myself.
Bottle it up and save it, sister. You murdered Jan Mason.
Did I?
Didn't you?
No one saw who shot him.
That's true. It's the general opinion that you did it.
The general opinion?
Naturally. You weren't the girl in charge of the prize cup. The real girl and the real cup have disappeared. And you were standing in a position where you could have fired the shot.
Are you sure of that?
I'm positive. I remember. I saw you.
Did I really shoot him?
What?
Tell me, did I really shoot him?
I don't know. All I know is that you were standing directly in front of Mason. And that so were six or eight others.
I don't know. I don't know.
Look here. Maybe you and I can make a deal.
A deal?
Tell me your story. Tell me what happened. Maybe I can help you.
I don't know what happened.
What do you mean you don't know?
All I know is there was a big crowd. And a golden cup. A little round white ball. A loud noise.
Go on.
That's all I remember. Next thing I knew, I was here in my apartment, stretched out on my bed with a gun in my hand.
Where is it?
In that drawer over there.
Yeah, this one over here?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been fired, a .32. Mason was killed with a .32.
He's dead.
If he isn't, sister, he's a great little pretender.
It wasn't my fault. I tell you, it wasn't my fault.
Oh, maybe it wasn't, maybe it wasn't. Now take it easy and tell me what happened.
Why should I tell you?
Because you've got to tell somebody.
But who are you?
My name's Lee Saunders. The clerk told you that on the phone. I'm a radio reporter, sports and news. Now it's your turn.
What?
Who are you?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Well, let me decide that. What's your name?
Ruth Candish.
What do you have against Jan Mason?
I didn't know him.
You make a habit of killing men you don't know?
I didn't even know him, I tell you. I didn't know him. Oh, let me alone.
Now, stop that.
No.
Oh, stop it, I say. Now, do you want to tell me what happened, or do you want to tell me and the police?
They're looking for me, aren't they? The police.
What do you think?
Listen, I've told you what happened. I don't remember a thing except a big crowd. A cup of gold, a little white ball, and a loud noise like a shot.
Yeah. And then you woke up here in your room with a gun in your hand. A gun that killed Jan Mason just a few moments after he'd won the golf championship.
It can't be true. It just can't be true.
You're in trouble, baby. You better let me try to help you.
What can you do?
I don't know till I've heard your story.
It must have been incense.
Incense? Now what are you talking about?
It came this morning in the mail. A little package with three little cones. It was addressed to me. There was a note inside. There in the drawer.
Where the gun was?
Yes.
Is this the paper it was wrapped in?
Yes.
Is this the incense?
Yes.
Well, I thought you said your name is Ruth Candish.
It is.
Well, this was addressed to Rotha Candish.
What?
Sure. Look for yourself. There, you see?
Yes. Did you find the note?
What note?
Oh, there it is. You dropped it on the floor.
Oh, this?
Yes. Read it.
Rotha, you will put a fire to one of these precisely at 1 this afternoon.
Yes. It was the incense.
What?
I tried to forget it, put it away, and tried to keep it off my mind, but exactly at 1, I opened the little metal box and lighted one of the cones. There was a lot of smoke, sweet, scented. That's all I remember.
Good Lord.
What are you doing?
Is there any more of the stuff left?
No, two more little cones.
Here, let's see. Yes, there are two left. Here, give me a match.
What?
A match. Get me a match.
Oh, no.
Oh, here's one.
Oh, don't. Please don't.
I'm going to see what this nonsense is all about.
Oh, no. Oh, please, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, we'll see in a minute. There.
Oh, I beg you not to do that.
So much smoke. So quickly. I don't understand how a little thing like that can produce so much smoke. That odor.
The very same.
It's so strange.
Oh.
Smoke. Look how it rolls in great clouds, hiding everything.
Stop me.
So much smoke, hiding everything. I can hardly see you.
Oh.
Like we were in another world.
You are in another world.
What? What's that?
Welcome, Rotha.
Well, that was an interesting ending to part one. Who's this creepy new guy coming on the scene?
That's for part two to disclose.
Yes, and that'll be coming up shortly. But nice little tale here from Dark Fantasy.
You have to say that with a Bela Lugosi type voice. Whenever you say Dark Fantasy, you have to say it with a Bela Lugosi type voice.
Dark Fantasy.
There you go. See?
Oh, see? Wrong vampire. Wonderful.
The best vampire.
two lovely vampires.
Today brought to you by the letter C, used for cooking. Good enough for me.
Wait a minute. We gotta intro that and try that again.
Uh-oh. The number's
here we go.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Today's Eerie House is brought to you by the letter A. And the number 7. Okay, that doesn't have anything.
I would have thought it was brought to you by the letter G today. So it shows you what I know.
It's certainly not for our radio.
Gold cup. What's
that? That would have been hilarious.
Some of these,
give the kids a word, they don't know what it means. Ambiguity. Yeah. Go look it up, kids. Or that would have been.
I don't know. It's kind of vague.
Keep you busy for a while.
It is a busy word.
Yep. It's kind of a vague word, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I would like to hear Count explain that word.
Ambiguity. There are seven reasons we can be ambiguous.
There you go.
I don't know.
So
that's all I got.
From what's been said so far in our little radio mystery, from what that guy said, sometimes where there's smoke, there's aliens.
Yeah, that's true.
The first thing he said was, from another world. Wait a second. Another world? What?
The great beyond.
That was a left turn.
Yep.
More like a U-turn there.
It seems to me, and maybe I had the impression it was more modern, because it seems like Dark Fantasy was a little ahead of its time in terms of this kind of storytelling. This
I
genre.
It was. I mean, it really... Yeah, I don't disagree with that. The kind of stuff that that they covered in here was not. Yeah, almost. Yeah.
That's what makes it good and yummy.
Not stop here. Yeah.
Yep. A little bit like that. Certainly another good anthology series for radio with Dark Fantasy. Let's go ahead and wrap up Cup of Gold. We may have some bonus time at the end here, possibly. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back.
Like we were in another world.
You are in another world.
What? What's that?
Welcome, Rotha and Letha.
Who are you? Where are you?
I am here beside you.
You see?
Yes, and now I do. The smoke's clearing away.
What happened?
Don't you recognize me, Rotha?
My name's Ruth. I've never seen you before.
Ah, that is where you are wrong. You have seen me before.
No, I don't know you.
You mean you don't recognize me?
Who are you?
My name is Mota.
Mota?
Yes, Rotha. I am the Holy One.
I don't understand.
What's happened to us? We were in this young lady's apartment. Now we're someplace I've never seen before. Where are we?
You are on Vento.
Vento? What's Vento?
Vento is an offspring of Venus and Pluto.
What?
It is a planet, as yet undiscovered by the scientists of the Earth, many hundreds of thousands of years ago, Venus and Pluto collided. That probably would sound absurd to your astrologers today, but it is a fact. As a result of the collision, Bento came into being. A portion of Venus and a part of Pluto fused, broke off, and became Bento.
You're talking over my head.
Naturally, the people who existed on Pluto and those of Venus intermingled with Bento, became a planet in its own right. As a result of that ancient catastrophe, the Ventonians came into existence. I am one of them. And the two of you are now here amongst us.
But how? How did we get here?
You remember the incense?
Oh, yes.
The incense?
It is one of Vento's secrets. A tiny cone that emits a vapor powerful enough to permit anyone in contact with it to do as we here on Vento bid him to do.
It still got me goofy. After I started the incense burning, everything changed. We ended up here.
Naturally. Because when you came in contact with the released vapors, I bade both of you to come here. And here you are.
Oh, now what do you take us for? This is the 20th century. Folks like us aren't taken in by some crack.
Just one moment. Here. Will you look through this?
Through what?
This telescope. Here. Right through here.
Oh, now.
It will not hurt you to look with it.
If you insist.
That's right. In there. Now, what do you see?
A large round globe.
It is the Earth. 10 million miles from here.
Preposterous.
You think so? Here. I'll turn on the ultra-penetrating ray machine and show you how preposterous it is. Now, what do you see?
Closer. It's coming closer. Yes, something's happening.
The ultra-penetrating ray is making 10 million miles of distance look like only inches.
It is the Earth. There's Europe, Great Britain, China, and Australia. Now I can see the California coast. And Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Illinois, Florida, Pennsylvania, New York.
Suppose we concentrate upon Florida. There.
No. It's not possible.
What do you see, Mr. Saunders?
A funeral. The funeral of Jan Mason, the golfer.
Oh, no.
Suppose you permit Rotha to look, Mr. Saunders.
Yes, all right.
Go right ahead, Rotha. That's right. There. You still do not remember, Rotha?
Why do you call me Rotha?
Because that is your name.
My name is Ruth.
When you were here, you were called Rotha.
When I was here?
Many centuries ago, Rotha, you were originally a Ventonian.
What are you talking about?
We have theories of reincarnation, as you do on your Earth.
Yes, I've heard about it vaguely, but...
The one failing is that your theories do not go far enough.
What do you mean?
That there is such a thing as reincarnation, Mr. Saunders. But it is not restricted to one single planet, such as the Earth.
You surely aren't trying to tell us that Miss Kendish here is the reincarnation of someone who lived up here.
Whether or not you accept it, it remains a fact.
Oh, that's utterly ridiculous.
I'm glad I had the foresight to think of your reluctance to believe. So I have prepared the truth.
Prepared what?
What are you talking about? What's the explanation
Must
of all
I
this?
Must I explain it again? The vapor of the incense I sent you. Once it surrounds you, you are at the mercy of the Ventonian who sent it. You on your planet would call it black magic. But it is merely nothing more than applied science.
What's this proof you were talking about?
I will extinguish the lights and show you. Here on Vento, all time, all incidents are recorded. I shan't attempt to explain them completely. Suffice it to say, the principle is somewhat similar to that of your talking pictures. only on a much more advanced and widespread scale. Anything that has ever happened here on Vento since the invention of this recorder can be reviewed by those who wish to see it. That's why there is no crime, no evil here. Now, I turn on the machine. I must ask you to be silent. Do not speak.
Mr. Saunders, look.
Quiet.
That's me.
Quiet, I say. It is you, but not in your present body. It is you of centuries ago. Watch closely now and listen.
Come in.
Darling.
Kenta, dearest.
Forgive me for coming to you so late, but I had to see you before tomorrow.
Oh, I'm glad you're here, dearest. I've waited for you all day.
I've been at practice.
Are you ready for the game tomorrow?
Yes, quite. I fear I'll have trouble defeating Yana, though. He's become quite expert.
Oh, do you care so much?
Rafa, if I should lose tomorrow... Oh, but we mustn't think of such a thing. Victory means everything to both of us.
Can't win now. My poor, poor Kenta. He tried so hard. Oh, but now it's too late. Unless there's a miracle. If Yana misses two strokes. Oh, but he can't. And even if he did, it would be a draw. If he takes but one stroke, my poor Kenta will be defeated. Yana is ready now. If he does it in a single stroke, Kenta has lost. Now, he did it. Yana did it. My poor, poor Kenta. Kenta.
My dearest one, I come to you, but without a cup of gold.
No, does it matter so much?
Yes, yes, much. I promised that you should have a cup.
But I don't mind.
I should have one.
We still have each other, Kenta. We will be married.
No, Rafa. For yesterday, I swore by the great god Venda that should I not be victorious, I wouldn't be worthy of you.
You swore by Venda?
Yes, yes. A sacred oath. I was so eager for victory, I knew that the very thought of losing you forever would inspire me to win. But I failed.
An oath sworn to Venda is a holy oath. I must resign myself to it. But now I swear by the great god of Venda, a holy and a sacred oath, that I will avenge what has happened. I will take vengeance from Yana if all eternity is required for me to do it.
I believe that is all the proof you need.
Ruth, did you know Truman Davis?
Truman Davis?
Truman Davis, the national golf champion, the one who was beaten by Jan Mason.
No, I didn't know either of them.
You think not, Rotha? Don't you recognize the man called Jan Mason? He is the reincarnation of the man Yana, who defeated Kenta in the games many years ago.
It all seems so familiar, and yet I'm so upset.
You swore a terrible oath centuries ago. An oath to work vengeance upon Yana. In your span of life here on Vento, you did not find the opportunity to avenge yourself. And so, as one of the high priests of Vento, it was my duty to bring to a climax your ancient oath.
You sent that devilish incense to her. You prompted her to go out there and kill Jan Mason. Gave her that golden cup.
It is the cup Kenta lost to Yana centuries ago. It amazes and confuses the Earth people greatly.
You're responsible for all that happened. Hypnotize this girl. Now what?
Now she'll return to the Earth and accept her punishment.
Oh, no. No, that's not right.
It is not for you to say.
It's for me to say.
Quick, there's no time to lose.
There's no escape from here.
The incense, I still have it here. There's one cone left, just one.
But what can you do?
Have you heard what he said? Anyone here on this planet can use it. Oh, confound it, haven't I got a match? Yeah, here's one. Now.
Please.
Careful, it's my last match. There, it's burning. Now turn on that ray machine.
Do what?
Turn it on.
Oh, all right. What are you going to do?
Look into the telescope. Watch. Tell me what happens.
All right.
I'm holding the burning incense in front of the telescope lens. Oh, I'm hoping.
Lee, it's still focused on the funeral. But something's happened.
Yes?
The coffin is gone. It's open. Someone's sitting up in it.
Is it Jan Mason?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Good. Just a mere thought did it. The penetrating ray sent the incense vapor directly to Earth, to the man in the casket, Mason. And I concentrated on his coming to life again.
He is. He is alive.
Oh, our friend's coming, too.
What do we do?
Here, give me your hand.
What?
Give me your hand. Come on, hurry, hurry.
Lee, that smoke.
Hurry, there's no time to lose.
How are we going to get away from here?
Simple. You saw what a mere thought did for Jan Mason. Hold tight now. Here we go.
The Cup of Gold, tonight's original tale of dark fantasy by Scott Bishop. Ben Morris was Lee Saunders, Eleanor Naylor Corrin played Ruth, Muir Height was the High Priest, and George Anday was Kenta. Next Friday, the 26th in this dark fantasy series created by Scott Bishop, Coffins for Two, the weird and pulse-pounding tale of two boxes roughly hewed into the shape of caskets, bearing three silver handles on each side and silver nameplates, on which were engraved the names of two living people. This is Tom Paxton speaking. Dark Fantasy comes to you each Friday night from Oklahoma City. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
And this is Erie House Radio, show number 600. I'm so touched that we are all here, all four of us, and we're all a little touched.
You have to be if you're coming back here.
That's right. Well, there's always something to say.
In that reminds me of cocktails for two, coffins for two, and some secluded rendezvous.
Coffins, yeah, okay.
Right.
The cocktail for two is much more enjoyable than that.
And there's always this. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
My boinger. What is it? The difference between oats, A-O-T-S, and oaths, A-O-T-H-S, is oats. A-O-T-S. Tastes better in milk. There you go.
Stay crunchy, even in milk.
That's right.
I love Slim Whitman.
Oh, I do too. Oh, yeah. I absolutely revel in that particular song.
Mega,
but even more so when
superstar.
It was applied in that movie. They just blew. I just cracked up. It was just so great.
Him and Boxcar Willie, mega superstars.
Yeah.
Slim Whitman has given us the device to repel the extraterrestrials. Just kick
that's
that
right.
Song in overdrive, and that'll knock them back into outer space.
Yep. Who
knew that tune would make someone's brain blow up? I mean, come on. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I can see it happening. There's some Earth peoples whose head might explode if you play it one too many times.
Yeah. Well, it also kind of gave a resurgence to that particular song because now the younger folks got to hear it if they hadn't heard it earlier or when they were – yeah, so.
It's like a curse. I got to hand it off.
It is.
Two more holes to play.
Did,
tomorrow night.
You have a
X minus one and theater five.
What were you saying, CW?
You wouldn't think you'd find it.
Oh, I was asking
go ahead,
what the next show would be, which Dale answered.
X minus one, you wouldn't think that they'd have a show about golf, but they have one about baseball and they have one about golf. And this one's called Open Warfare and the golf episode. Yeah.
And curiously named Theater 5 episode, The Banana Ball.
Yeah, I never heard that term before, and Dale, you will know what he's talking about when they get into the banana ball there.
Yeah, it's a terrible slice. The trajectory of the ball looks like a banana.
Right. Right, to the left or to the right, something like that.
Usually to the right if you're a right-handed golfer. A slice is to the right of
being
banana
a left,
ball.
Being a lefty, a left-handed Scotsman, mine would slice to the left.
Yep. I used to aim at the trees on the left because I knew I was going to slice to the right and hopefully land somewhere near the middle of the fairway. But
so, even though you know you're going to slice, you look in the direction, hoping maybe it'll fall.
Yes.
I guess.
Oh, that happened.
I don't know how that works. I guess along the lines of hand-eye coordination, but I don't know.
It's a very curious game, and one can get extremely lucky because there's so many variables and so many things can happen. One time I had three absolutely horrible wrong shots, and I got a birdie, which is one under par. It took three lousy strokes on a par four. I was trying to play that slice. It was a dog leg left. It means the course turns to the left. And I just duffed the ball and scuffed it ahead. Then I took out another wood and because it was in tall grass, hit it and duffed it again, but I got around the corner. It was just a horrible, horrible, horrible shot. The last one, I meant to shoot it way up in the air. You use a higher numbered club, which doesn't go as far, but gets you higher in the air, like to get over obstacles such as trees and things like that. And you also, believe it or not, by hitting it higher in the air, you exercise greater control. So I get out an 8-iron, and I take a swing, and I hit it right on the blade of the ball, or on the blade of the club. So instead of going up in the air, it shot like a line drive, hit the pin, and fell in the cup.
Wow.
Unreal. And dropped just straight down when I hit the pin. It's like three horrible idiot shots, and I got that lucky. It can happen.
I was just wondering, it's actually not that far away because the show has hit the big 600, but any special thoughts about what show 666 will be?
You know, I hadn't thought about it, but we'll have to see if we can.
Definitely some witch's tale on that one.
Yeah. There's some. Possibly, I hadn't thought about that, but thanks for planting that in my brain.
Yep, that's a dangerous place to put stuff. But tomorrow night, again, two more golf tales right here on Erie House Radio. Thanks, everyone, for joining us live. We will start Fridays at 6:30 going forward, Eastern. So think about that, and we'll see you tomorrow night at 6:30. Bye.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her and him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
What?
Don't. come alone.
Don't. Stop. Don't. The live listeners got as far as don't. Don't what? Don't what? We left them in suspense.
Yep. I'll never know what was going to come. Yep.
I think the only golf story I might have, it may or may not have happened, would be my adventures at Putt-Putt Miniature Golf, and I made a hole-in-one, but not on the hole I was shooting at.
I love that.
Yeah.
Golf is one of those games where just about anything that can happen will. I remember as a caddy watching this guy, and he hit this beautiful long shot in the middle of the fairway. And there was a squirrel running across the fairway. And he got it right in the head. And I thought that, I mean, a golf ball hurts. I don't know if you've ever been hit by a golf ball on the fly.
They're hard.
They hurt.
Those things can be dangerous. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know how this squirrel survived. He went tumbling, and he scampered off. I don't know how he survived, but it hit him. You could hear it, too.
Yeah.
When that squirrel gets home, his wife is really going to get into him. You know, that's all I can say.
I told you
drinking again, huh? No, really, I got hit by a golf ball. Yeah, okay. Down at the club? Yeah, okay. Never mind.
Yes, the golf club.
You were saying, CW?
I was just wondering. I was wondering, in your golfing experience, do you ever witness someone going ballistic and taking their golf club and just tossing them into the pond? I've heard that people will do that.
Or their bag? Yeah.
Yeah, I end up not wanting to ever golf with those kind of people again.
Did you observe that much as a caddy, Dale?
Not as a caddy. That was a very high level golf course, okay? And people were restrained. Not that you didn't hear cursing and somebody like whip a club, but nothing like really destructive. When I started playing in my 20s, I almost became that golfer, and I quit because I like, this is not enjoyable. Picked it up again in my mid-30s, and that's when I learned to appreciate, you know, I had chilled out a little more. I was pushing too hard, trying too hard. That's how difficult of a game it was. And I felt I should be better, playing better than I was. And I hadn't taken into account how difficult it was and chilled out in my mid-30s. And, you know, with no formal training, some pretty crappy clubs, and, like, again, no professional equipment, I would end up playing, like, bogey golf, like, on average one over par for a course, which means I got a few pars.
That's not bad. That's not too bad.
Like if I would play 36 to 54 holes a week, then I would get down to like bogey golf by the end of the season.
Bogey golf. Is Lauren Bacall there?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know for proof positive, guys, because I'm still doing research, but I may have the actual origins of golf as it was conceived of by the world's greatest inventor ever known, Ugg the Caveman. Yep.
Ugg is back! Yes!
I'm hoping so. I'm still doing the research, so, you know, it could be the Ugg may make a return tomorrow.
Woot, woot for Ugg.
I thought, when I was younger, I was really good at billiards, and I thought, you know, if I'm good at billiards, I should be really good at golf, but the two don't equate, I guess.
No, and you would think swinging something like baseball would equate. Baseball is the worst thing for a golf swing. That's where the slice comes from. You turn your wrists with a baseball bat, and you're supposed to keep your wrists level and stiff.
I wonder if a bowler would have better luck at it. Someone who bowls, professional bowler.
The ball will never fit in the hole. Never fit in those little golf balls.
Someone who does the sport of curling. Are you familiar with curling?
Even the duck ball is too big.
I know a little of curling. I almost kind of know what it is. It's weird. It's kind of hockey-ish, isn't it?
Yes, it's from our Canadian cousins,
It's more like shuffleboard on ice, right, CW?
Yes, you take a stone, a flat, round stone, and the modern ones, of course, now have a metal handle on it, and you have the bowler, and it's on ice, and they slide down partially on the ice, and then they, but it has to slide ever so easily on the ice, and in front of the stone, you have the broom, where people are batting the broom in front of it, the momentum going for as much as possible until it either knocks the opponent stone out of the way or goes farther towards the area where you win. People must have been really bored when they invented that game.
It involves ironing and sweeping the floor. I never understood it.
Ironing and sweeping the floor.
And sweeping the ice, that's even worse.
I'm guessing what they're looking to reduce friction or create friction or something to get the ball to keep going, or the stone, or whatever.
It tries to keep it on a path. That's what they're. I think it's warming, trying to warm the ice a bit. I think, is that what it is, CW? Something of that nature. It helps keep it going in the direction they want it to go when it works.
Yeah, sort of akin to
warm up ice, it would slow it down.
Yeah.
Is curling, isn't curling an Olympic event, too, I think?
It is, yeah.
Yeah,
right next to synchronized swimming. It's right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, synchronized swimming in the wintertime, they all turn blue, so you got to be careful.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm going to insult or, you know, offend somebody, but I just never thought of synchronized swimming as sport, but more of an exhibition. I don't see the sporting aspect of it. Because art is something that's artistic to me, is subjective, so it's hard to determine to me who wins.
Well, I guess if they sink, they fail. I don't know.
Better presentation.
And again, I would argue.
Berkeley must have been would have been considered an Olympic coach. All those movies that had the synchronized swimmers in the pool.
Yeah. Some of those were cool.
There's a funny Saturday Night clip about synchronized swimming that stars what's that guy's name?
Not Dave
Harvey. No, the guy that was what was that guy's name? Oh, I can't think of the guy's name. Dana. It wasn't Dana Carvey.
I don't know.
No, it wasn't Eddie Murphy. No, Eddie Murphy did After a Hot Tub with James Brown.
It was a white guy.
I'm trying to think of anything.
It was a white guy, and he's known for having his pants way up high, almost to his chest, and he greases his hair back, and he has a big whip in front. I can't remember. And he does a funny dance.
Martin Short?
Yeah. Martin Short and one of the other people on Saturday Night Live do a synchronized swimming bit. I've aired it on Horrible Horror, and it's just hilarious.
I don't know. The greatest synchronized swimming skit ever to me. Starts off with the words, "Send in the nuns."
from the History of the World part.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The Inquisition.
Oh, okay.
What a show! The Inquisition.
Yeah.
Here we go. Oh, it was horrible.
I know that movie. I don't remember that one.
There was scene in Austin Powers. Austin Powers. I think it was either in. The original one? No, it was The Spy Who Shagged Me. That was it. They did a synchronized swim thing for the opening segment.
It's cool because
to go back and rewatch.
Yep, you can get a very retro feel by doing things like that. There is what was it? The second Indiana Jones movie had a musical bit with her name was Willie in the movie.
Willie Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Everything Goes. Yeah.
Anything goes.
Yep.
That was Kate Capshaw.
Very cleverly done, I thought.
Who is now Steven Spielberg.
Yep. Good stuff.
Oh. Almost fit into that dress that she was wearing.
Yeah, that sparkly red dress.
Well, that sparkling ruby red dress. She got so upset when it got poked. My dress! That's a Paris original. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. She's griping and he's running for his life.
Let's get our priorities. That's a Paris original dress. What's wrong?
Yeah, there would be guys shooting at me and throwing sharp things at me. I kind of got to not worry about the dress so much.
But it's a Paris original. Paris. That's in France. Not Texas. France.
Yes.
Not
That's
China.
Right. There is a Paris, Texas, isn't there?
Paris.
Yes.
Instead of an Eiffel Tower.
It just dawned on me that, you know why golf would never be an Olympic sport? It takes too long.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. When a tournament takes an entire weekend, it's not even like a football game with overtime. I mean, that's a long time. It did take a long time to play, but it's relaxing. You know what I mean? You can walk or ride a cart. But even when you ride the cart, there's a good deal of walking, and it's kind of aerobic swinging the club, you know?
Yeah. To me, the entertainment is by the player engaged in it. I don't see it as that much of a spectator sport. Like, come on, really? I mean, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I could. If that is a sport, I cannot watch, but I love to play.
Yeah.
Basketball is another one like that for me, which has nothing to do with golf, but I can't watch it, but I like playing it.
Okay. In my regard, the other mind-numbing sport, sorry golfers, would be cricket. I have watched a cricket game, and now I know what it must be like to be to a coma. I don't understand what the...
Then there's rugby.
And the people are... Well, at least there's...
Rugby, you know...
There's a little action there.
Yeah.
There's plenty of action in rugby, yeah.
A lot of action, right.
Once there was a fight and a rugby game broke out.
And nobody noticed.
Yeah, nobody noticed.
They couldn't tell the difference between the game and the fight.
Yep. Yeah. What do they call that, a scrum?
There was a fight and a hockey game broke out. Nobody noticed.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I adapted the joke from because that's an oldie. But, yeah, hockey's brutal.
Funny, what has historically been one of the most
peaceful countries in the world has such a violent sport. Maybe that's what it takes.
Well, yeah, they have to vent somewhere. That's it.
Well, that was the whole purpose of sports. If you go back to Rome and the extreme sports they had back then, that was the whole purpose, is to give the populace a way to vent. You know?
And distract them from the government doing whatever it was doing.
Absolutely. Well, there's always that.
Tell that to the lion who has indigestion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Okay. Oh, gosh. I shouldn't have eaten that one. Oh.
I didn't like them picking up those kitties. That's horrible.
That green shell was a little tough. Oh.
Feeding them Christians when it's Lent. It's terrible.
Leak out of my teeth. Okay.
Yeah.
Feeding Christians to the lions on Lent, that just seems unholy to me.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. A little bit. But you can't compare to
Lent. Out of my gums, the poor lion.
Yep. Lions are smart. So they're very smart animals, and they will. Some of them will remember people.
I'll join you tomorrow.
Yep.
I want one. A lion.
You want a lion?
Yes, I would like a lion. I actually have one. It's a dog.
Okay.
I went to Taco Bell a couple of weeks ago, and they go, he looks like a lion. He's got that big plume of hair.
Okay.
Have a sizable mane.
They do. Collies have a big mane of hair. And unfortunately, he's going through a process called blowing his coat, meaning he's leaving collie glitter all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a constant state of vacuum. Collie glitter.
Do you have to spend hours grooming him, or do you send him off for that?
We brush him quite a bit. The wife does a bit more of it than I do, but he is due for a professional grooming in about a week, next weekend.
Yeah,
the 16th is going to be a busy day for
you.
Okay.
Speak to you tomorrow.
Nope.
All righty then.
Well, you know what has to be done then, CW?
Oh, of course. My duties, of course.
Yes.
Skirt my responsibilities or obligations. tap, 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 tap. Mr. Durante, the audience is waiting.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. It's time to say good night. But good night. We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Toodles.
Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
The foregoing has made it obvious to me that we've had quite enough for one evening. We shall save the rest until next week when I shall reappear. Until then, good night.